Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Out front next, census showdown. The administration telling a federal judge it's now looking at all options to add a citizenship question to the census. And Trump teases a possible executive order. But does he have a case? Plus, the president hitting back at Joe Biden after the former vice president called him a bully and said he'd smack him in the mouth. Is this the reset Biden needs? And Kamala Harris releasing her latest fundraising numbers as she shifts her focus to Iowa. But is she too late to the game in that key state? Let's go up front. Good evening, everyone. I'm Kate Baldwin in for Aaron Burnett. Welcome to a special edition of Out Front tonight. No consensus on the census. The administration telling a federal judge today that it's moving forward with plans to fight to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census, even though they've already started printing it without the question. How do they plan to do this? That is the million-dollar question tonight. The president claims that he's considering a number of options, 4 to 5, he said, including the power of the presidency.
Are you going to issue an executive order on the census?
We're thinking about doing that. It's one of the ways. We have 4 or 5 ways we can do it. It's one of the ways, and we're thinking about doing it.
At the same time, his Department of Justice is still looking for ways to fight it out in court and take it back to the Supreme Court. For example,
you need it for many reasons. Number one, you need it for Congress. You need it for Congress, for districting. You need it for appropriations. Where are the funds going? How many people are there? Are they citizens? Are they not citizens?
So he's making the case for the reasoning right there. But remember that that reason that the president gave there is not the reason that we've heard before, just like 4 days ago.
I think it's very important to find out if somebody's a citizen as opposed to an illegal. I think that there's a big difference to me between being a citizen of the United States and being an illegal. And, you know, the Democrats want to treat the illegals with health care and with other things better than they treat the citizens of our country.
And something of that sentiment just today being echoed by the man in charge of President Trump's citizenship agency.
Frankly, as part of the ongoing debate about how we deal both financially and legally with the burden of those who are not here legally, that is a relevant issue.
Are you confused? You should be. But this is important because the reason and motivation behind adding the question into the census is everything. Are partisan politics driving this fight? Or maybe let's try door number 3. The president also pointing to history.
If you look at the history of our country, it's almost always been asked.
Now, it has been asked, but not of everyone and most of the time, not of everyone most of the time, and certainly not since 1950. But regardless, the scramble and confusion is all because the president is demanding his Department of Justice find a legal path to carry out his wishes, even though it appears no path exists right now. Abby Phillip is out front live outside the White House for us tonight. Abby, the president really seems to be undeterred on this front.
Absolutely. And so undeterred that he's turning his old administration's plan upside down in order to pursue this without a clear path for victory. The president earlier this week, when his commerce secretary announced that he wasn't moving forward, got so much blowback from conservatives about this issue because it strikes at the core of something that is important to his base, which is namely knowing who is a citizen and who is not and drawing a bright line between those two groups of people. And so that is why we are where we are today, with the president trying to push forward on this, signaling to his base that he's not giving up, and in the process throwing his Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross under the bus. Wilbur Ross was the one to say, we're moving forward with the census, printing these documents without that question. And President Trump, according to our sources, has been frustrated with Ross, believing that Ross gave up on this issue when he wants to fight. That's according to a source. So where we are right now is that the administration is basically struggling to come up with a plan. And as you mentioned, the president is falling back on something that he often does, which is executive action, saying, I'm just going to file an executive order to fix this. The problem is it's not clear that that is even going to work, whether that will pass muster with the Supreme Court. That's already said the administration needs to go back to the drawing board on the rationale for this. And so at the moment, the administration is simply trying to figure out a legal path forward. And it all may not end up with the citizenship question being on the census at all. But at the end of the day, President Trump gets to tell his base he did not give up on this very important fight for him.
And win or lose or draw, the fight is exactly what President Trump is you can see, taking back to his political base on this very issue. It's great to see you, Abby. Thank you so much. As you can tell, it's all questions with very few answers right now, but let's see where we can get with this. Out front now is Dale Ho. He's the director of the Voting Rights Project for the ACLU. He's at the center of this legal fight against the Trump administration and the census citizenship question. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so the Department of Justice, they're going to continue this fight. From what you have now heard today, what is your response?
Well, the Supreme Court blocked this question because it found that the Department of Justice and Commerce were not truthful. They essentially lied about why they put this question on the census. And now their response to it isn't, okay, you got us. Here's our real reason for doing it. Their response is, give us a few more days. We're going to come up with another story. And then you hear these different rationales emanating from different parts of the
administration. But the Supreme Court did say, go back to the drawing board, come back with another reason, even though you're right. In Roberts' decision, he did not, but clearly did not believe what Wilbur Ross was offering up.
That's right. He said that it was contrived. And now the administration is saying, give us a few more days. We're going to contrive something else. And maybe you'll like what's behind door number three, as you put it.
So what's your take on the executive order? The president's considering an executive order to do this. If he does, what do you do?
Well, it really doesn't make any difference if it's an executive order or a decision by Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. Anything can be challenged in court. The president issued an executive order on the wall. It was challenged in court and it was blocked. He issued an executive order rescinding DACA. It was challenged in court and that was blocked. And he issued an executive order on three versions of the travel ban, two of which were blocked in court and the third of which, you know, was at least litigated in court. So it really doesn't make any difference for him to issue an executive order. If it's illegal, it's illegal.
When you list those things out, a lot of those took a lot of time in court. This could be expedited because we're looking at deadlines, of course. But are you concerned about this legal? I mean, President Trump will fight this to the end. There's no downside for him on this.
Well, I think the end's already happened here. The administration has said over and over again that no changes to the census form can be made after June 30th. Well, it's July 5th. I mean, they made
that was clearly a fabricated. I feel like that was one of those self-imposed made-up deadlines because now the deadline is October.
Well, they said to the Supreme Court, you need to hear this case now. You need to skip the intermediate appellate court. You need to expedite this case. You need to truncate the time that we had to brief this case. And for them now to go to the Supreme Court and say, ha ha, just kidding. Well, that's really not a good way to run a Justice Department.
Are you confident if this does end up back before the Supreme Court, it was a slim majority that blocked it this time. Are you confident you will prevail again? They did say, come up with another reason. No matter if it's logical or not to you or seems contrived or not to you, there could be another reason and it could end up back. It's been on the census before. It could end up back there again.
Well, look, I don't like to predict the outcomes of things, but I am confident. We prevailed in the Supreme Court once. because the administration was untruthful. Now they have to come back and say, we not only do we have a new reason, we were also untruthful with you, Supreme Court, about the June 30th deadline. I mean, this just smells of bad faith from top to bottom. And I just can't imagine that the Supreme Court is going to give its blessing to this.
The reason behind this is everything, right? The motivation, why do you want to add it back on? That's exactly what really became the question before the Supreme Court. There are a couple things I want to play for you because I want to get your take. One of them is Ken Cuccinelli, who said today he's now the acting director of President Trump's citizenship agency. Let me play again what he said.
Frankly, as part of the ongoing debate about how we deal both financially and legally with the burden of those who are not here legally, that is a relevant issue.
It's not entirely clear to me exactly what he's trying to say in that reasoning for putting the question on the census, but what do you make of his reason?
I'm not sure it's clear to him either, but, you know, the question that they're proposing to put on the census is a question, are you a citizen or not?
Yes.
It wouldn't ask whether or not you're undocumented or not. So the very rationale that Mr. Cuccinelli is articulating there isn't one that could be advanced by a citizenship question. It wouldn't tell you anything about the undocumented population specifically.
If we're being totally honest, it's complicated and simple, all wrapped up into one. It's complicated to talk about, you know, the census, the citizenship question, when it started in 1790 and it continues and whatever. President Trump made one very basic argument that I want to play for you about why he believes at his core the citizenship question matters. Listen to this.
We're spending $15 to $20 billion on a census. We're doing everything. We're finding out everything about everybody. Think of it. $15 to $20 billion, and you're not allowed to ask them, are you a citizen?
On the most basic level, how is he wrong about that, though?
Well, we're not finding everything there is to know about everyone through the census. The census is actually a pretty simple survey. It has 10 questions on it. And the reason why it's so simple is we need people to respond to it. If people don't respond to it, they're missed in the census and we don't get an accurate population count. The Census Bureau has all other kinds of surveys to find out other information. The unemployment statistics, for example, not determined through the decennial census. It's through a sample survey that happens on a monthly basis. If we want to know characteristics of the population, like citizenship, like documented status, there are ways of doing that without complicating the census, because you want the census to be as simple as possible so that people respond to it and we get an accurate head count.
Dale, do you see, though, the point that just the fight for the president is good for him politically?
I can't comment on it politically one way or the other. I'm just a lawyer. I just, you know, litigate this.
I'd love to be able to say that. I can't comment on anything. I'm just a lawyer. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see what happens next, and we'll see if you're going to be arguing before the Supreme Court again very soon.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate your time. Out front for us next, Joe Biden calls Trump a bully. Is the president wise to take the bait?
I don't think I'm a bully at all. I just don't like being taken advantage of.
Is this exactly what Team Biden wanted? Plus, Kamala Harris releases her latest fundraising numbers and comes up, still a big number, but comes up short. Should her supporters be worried? And CNN exposes a second secret Facebook group connected to Border Patrol agents with vulgar posts about migrants. But tonight, the president is defending border agents. Tonight, President Trump is rejecting the attack from Joe Biden and comments made in Biden's exclusive interview with CNN.
I don't think I'm a bully at all. I just don't like being taken advantage of.
But that is exactly what Biden says the president is, in a fresh round of name-calling on the campaign trail.
The idea that I'd be intimidated by Donald Trump, he's the bully that I knew my whole life. He's the bully that I've always stood up to. He's the bully used to make fun when I was a kid and a stutter and I smacked him in the mouth. Look, this is not. But I think the American people want a president who has some dignity, who has a value set, who is actually trying to restore the soul of this country. So when they turn on the television, they look up and their kids say, I want to be like that guy or that woman.
Out front now, CNN's Arlette Sines, who's following the Biden campaign. Arlette, is Team Biden happy that Trump is now sparring with Biden once again?
Well, Kate, Biden's team see President Trump's willingness to engage with Joe Biden as just another sign that he is concerned about Biden becoming the Democratic nominee and having to face off against him in the fall. As our colleagues over at the White House have reported, Trump's advisors have warned him against going after Joe Biden, bringing him up unwarranted because they don't want to elevate the former vice president any further. But in that interview, that exchange that he had with our colleague Chris Cuomo, Biden is really trying to reassure voters that he is ready to take on President Trump, despite that uneven debate performance where he was drawing friendly fire from his fellow Democrats like Kamala Harris. So Biden in that interview really trying to just reinforce that notion that he is the best person prepared to take on President Trump. He also in that interview was pushing against this idea that there is a leftward tilt in the Democratic Party. Biden describing himself as center left. He thinks Democrats are more in line with that center left view, which also, when you think about it, can also play into a general election argument as Biden is hoping that he can pick off some of those previous Trump voters. Kate?
Yeah, there's strategy to it all. Absolutely. Great to see you, Arlen. Thank you so much. Out front with me now, Rob Astorino, a member of President Trump's 2020 Re-Election Advisory Council. Jennifer Granholm, the former Democratic governor of Michigan. Thanks for being here, guys. Governor.
You bet.
You helped prep Biden for the debate. The candidate that you see in this new interview, smacking Trump in the mouth, calling him a bully. Is this the reset you want to see?
Well, I love this interview. I thought it was a great interview. I think it shows that he is really ready to start punching at Trump. And it allowed a more fulsome conversation, obviously, than debate allows. But I think Chris asked some really sharp questions, and I think it will continue to, you know, these conversations will continue to evolve. I like the fact that Biden was able to get out some more clear punches at the president, because I think that's what Democrats want to see.
Biden is making adjustments, Rob. Does he look like a more formidable candidate?
No. And, okay. You know, just calling him a bully, ooh, that's going to really scare Donald Trump, who is used to tussling with anyone and everyone at any time. And if you hit him
on any issue, real or imagined,
well, you know what? If you hit him, he's going to hit you back twice as hard. And Chris was bringing that up in the interview. Are you ready to not only tussle, but, you know, go after with everything you've got? But I think, and maybe the governor can answer this, I think before he gets to Trump, obviously, he's got to get through the Democratic primary. And you saw it in the debate. He's tentative, and I think the issues he had with women thinking he was being inappropriate to them, how is he going to respond now against a Kamala Harris or an Elizabeth Warren, two women who he's going to have to get past in order to win the nomination? It's a very delicate balance for him to attack them, and yet, you know, he's got the whole issue of being inappropriate to women in the past. So that's a really tough balancing act that he's going to have to deal with.
I'm not talking about sexually.
I'm just talking about how he's going to treat them, because there's that dynamic in a debate against a woman or against a Donald Trump, a man. And that's that. You got to thread the needle if you're someone like Joe Biden.
Okay. Let's just be really clear, though. You are on the team of the guy who last week was accused of rape and has been a serial sexual predator against women. That's all I'm saying is that you raising this issue about Joe Biden being close, you know, physically in proximity with women is just a completely apples and oranges thing. I do think the point about anybody who's going into this next debate thinking that they can play nice among Democrats, meaning that nobody's going to be attacked, has been set straight. That is not going to happen. This debate will be a battle, clearly. And I think that what Joe Biden raised today in his explanation that Democrats really want to be able to have an option to keep their private insurance and an option, a public option, like to buy into Medicare, is going to be one of those fault lines that you will see laid bare on the stage. And I think that no one is going to be pulling punches.
On the issue of pulling punches, I mean, you've got Biden now, Governor, talking about smacking Trump in the mouth. And then Kamala, I want to play what Kamala Harris said just yesterday when asked if a very similar question. Is she ready basically to throw down against Trump? Asked about this by a caucus goer. Listen to this.
There is so much to fight for and so much at stake. And we can't afford to be lovely and then lose. So we need to know how to fight. And And there is no question in my mind also that we will win.
Can't be lovely and lose. Do you think that's what Democrats really want to see for their candidates to get in the mud with Trump?
Are you asking me?
Yes. Sorry, Governor. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that Democrats want to know, can you throw a punch back? It doesn't have to be getting into the mud. It can be a strong, solid punch. They want to know, are you going to be a warrior on my behalf? Because Trump is a bully. He is that guy, as Joe Biden said, in the schoolyard. And you, when you are bullied, you have one or two of two choices. You can either become a bully or you can stand up to bullies. And that's what Joe Biden is expressing that he's going to do. That's what others want to do. That's what Kamala Harris is saying today. I am going to be a warrior on your behalf. I'm not going to have to get into the mud. There's so much that's obvious about what this president has brought our country, sunk it down to. But let me just say one quickly, the series of comments really is important when it comes to these international affairs, because Trump is seen to side with bullies and to be against our allies. And that, I think, is going to be a legitimate and fair series of conversations that they have in the general election as well as in the primary.
Rob.
Well, you know, the whole sinking, the economy certainly is not sinking. The jobs report came out again today, 250,000 new jobs, manufacturing jobs, wages up, lowest unemployment across the board for every sector. So, you know, they're going to have to run a campaign saying things are bad when people go, it's really not bad. I'm at work. My salary's going up. And talking about bullies, you know, Trump is confronting people around the world, but doing it in a different way that's been done in the past. He's not sitting at a baseball game with Castro giving Cuba everything they want and getting nothing in return. Trump has taken a different path here. And so far, we haven't had bombs, or at least reports of bombs, coming over Hawaii when everyone was scattering. You know, that was the fear in the past. Now Trump is here.
Well, that was the fear when Trump started going after Kim Jong-un and calling him Rocket Man. There was certainly a fear about that. That was under President Trump.
Look where we're at today.
That wasn't under President Obama.
Look where we're at today. We've got relative peace around the world.
We don't see a denuclearized peninsula.
But we're getting very close to it, right?
I think
we're getting a lot closer. I think we're getting a lot closer than we've ever been for 8 years.
No, no, no. I'm just going to say this. We have no evidence that there's been any change in terms of nuclear North Korea.
How does Biden answer this question? 8 years, you sat there with President Obama, and you turned a blind eye, and North Korea is now this close to getting a nuclear bomb. So what did you do for 8 years?
Factually, there is no
dealing with
guys, I'm going to end it here, but factually, Rob, there's no evidence that they're this close, this close, or this close. There's no evidence that anything is closer. Nothing has been
agreed to. So why are we paying attention to North Korea? Who cares?
You don't need to, I guess, but I think the rest of us should. All right, guys, I think this is going to be a very interesting primary and general election. Thanks, guys. Governor. You can watch much more of CNN's exclusive interview with Joe Biden tonight at 8 o'clock. Out front for us next, Kamala Harris bringing her newfound momentum to Iowa. And voters in the crucial state of Iowa are taking notice.
You've got to show up and you've got to give them a chance to understand you and see who you are.
And President Trump calling the country's migrant detention centers clean, good, and beautifully run, the same centers one official has called a ticking time bomb. Welcome back to a special edition of Out Front. Tonight, 2020 candidate Kamala Harris coming up a bit short. Her campaign announcing the senator raised just under $12 million in the second quarter. That's a big number, don't get me wrong, but it's less than she raised in the first quarter, less than half of what another Democratic candidate, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, raised in the same amount of time. This comes as Harris makes a big push in the critical first-in-the-nation state of Iowa, a state Harris hasn't paid as much attention to as some of her rivals. Kyung Lah is out front.
Kamala Harris makes her first swing through Iowa since the Democratic debate. And as she works the crowd, her breakout debate moment with Joe Biden comes up again and again.
After the debates, I really confirmed my support for her. I love Joe Biden. I think he's a wonderful guy. But I think we need new ideas. We need new younger people.
30 new Harris workers started just this week to capitalize on the latest Iowa poll showing her in second place behind Biden and catch up with the organizations being built in the state by rivals Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker.
I think she's, quite frankly, maybe the only one that can beat the
But Chris Tench remains skeptical.
I think she needs to pay more attention to Iowa. I mean, we're the first caucus, and that's where she needs to be.
What happens if she continues this way?
People snub her, you know. They'll just think that she doesn't care.
She's talking about the emphasis Harris has put into Iowa. Harris has made 5 visits to Iowa, holding fewer events than Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker, and Elizabeth Warren, while she and Booker have done the most in South Carolina, where Harris will make her 9th trip this weekend.
What's up, South Carolina?
South Carolina remains central to Harris's path to the nomination. But the last Democrat to win the nomination without winning Iowa was Bill Clinton in 1992.
A lifelong Iowan who says she's felt that you haven't paid enough attention to Iowa. What do you tell a voter like her?
I care deeply about the people of Iowa and the state, which is why we are putting the kind of resources that we're putting in. I don't know how many times I've been here already and will continue to come back.
I think we're going to see polls change throughout. I think people will have their moments.
Iowa State Auditor Rob Sand beat an incumbent to win in 2018. As a caucus state, one-on-one contact is crucial to win, says Sand.
You've got to show up and you've got to give them a chance to understand you and see who you are.
We will win this election.
Shortly after Kamala Harris's last event here in Iowa in Sioux City, her campaign released how much she had fundraised in the second quarter. That number is nearly $12 million per her campaign. That is just under what she had raised in the first quarter. Now, if you compare where she is with the rest of the pack, Pete Buttigieg leads in how much he raised in the second quarter at $24.8 million. Joe Biden at $21.5 million. Bernie Sanders at $18 million, followed by Kamala Harris. Kate?
Kyung, thank you so much. Out front with me now, Democratic Congresswoman Barbara Lee of California. She has endorsed Senator Harris. Congresswoman, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Glad to be with you, Kate.
Thanks. Are you concerned on the Iowa question? Are you concerned that the Harris campaign is late to the game in Iowa?
No, Kamala Harris is paying a lot of attention to Iowa. She has been there for the last 2 days. And I am telling you, there have been overflow crowds. And I think people in Iowa really know what we've known for many years, and that is the more you get to know Kamala, the more you hear Kamala, the more you understand and support her, but also the more you understand her policies and support her policies. She's building out her infrastructure in Iowa and in New Hampshire with over 100 volunteers, and she's going to continue to build momentum in Iowa because she understands very well that the needs of Iowans, and she really wants to be there over and over and over again because she intends to win there.
One indicator of support is often money. And the Harris campaign announced today that they raised just under $12 million in the second quarter. That puts her behind Buttigieg, Biden, and Sanders in terms of the candidates who have announced their second quarter totals. As a member of Congress, you know how important fundraising is. And as a supporter, are you disappointed?
Absolutely not. When you look at Kamala Harris, she's raised over $25 million throughout the campaign. The second quarter, she has 150,000 new donors. Right after the debate, she raised $3 million. And let me tell you what is so important about this. She has a broad base of support. Her average donation is $39. Her average online donation is $24. And then when you look at the fact that after the campaign, half of the new donors were new donors. And so she's right on track. She's working very hard and she's going to win this campaign and she's raising the kind of money that she needs to win.
Yeah, you got to keep raising that money, though, as you well know. Got to keep because you're spending it.
Absolutely.
You spend a lot of it. You got to raise it.
And she's demonstrating that she can raise it, and especially how she's raising it from small donors. I mean, $34 as the average donation, $24 online.
Right.
That says a lot about the people that she's connecting with who support her.
And for everyone at home, that gives you a lot of room to grow in which how much people are going to be giving you and your base. In this exclusive interview that Joe Biden did with CNN, he said that he wasn't prepared for the attack that came at him at the debate from Kamala Harris. Let me play you what he said.
I was prepared for them to come after me, but I wasn't prepared for the person coming at me the way she came out. She knew Bo. She knows me.
Harris today was asked about that statement, and she basically said that she didn't know what to say about that remark. What do you say about it?
Well, first of all, let me just say, and I watched the debate, and I understand how personal this is for Senator Harris, as it is for millions of Americans, especially for African Americans, and for myself. I remember very well the days before Brown versus Board of Education. I could not attend public school with white children. And it's the federal government, Kate, it's the federal government, the busing, the mandatory busing, that really did allow for the integration of schools. And so when you look at our federal government, it's extremely important to recognize that it's the federal government that has provided for equal access for our voting rights, for our civil rights. Now we're fighting for the Equality Act, for LGBTQ rights. And so Kamala Harris understands this very personally, and I think that when she said what she said, she really did understand that this was wrong and wanted to make sure that that the vice president understood that working with segregationists to oppose busing affected millions of people, and we want our federal government to support the rights of minorities.
Congresswoman, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Much more to come. Out front for us next, a border agent calling out other border agents for humiliating a migrant in custody. This as more shocking social media posts are exposed. Plus, 2020 candidate John Hickenlooper is out front. Will a major campaign shakeup give him the momentum that he needs to take on the top tier? The former Colorado governor is my guest. Tonight, President Trump is not only defending Customs and Border Patrol, but also applauding the conditions inside migrant detention centers.
I've seen some of those places, and they are run beautifully. They're clean. They're good. They do a great job.
He says this despite a government-produced report released this week detailing dangerous overcrowding and unhealthy and unsanitary conditions, even calling these facilities in this report a ticking time bomb. And now CNN is learning of another secret Facebook group linked to Customs and Border agents filled with racist and offensive posts about migrant families and Democratic lawmakers. Let's go to the border town now of El Paso, Texas. Natasha Chen is out front. Natasha, the posts in the now in this now second Facebook group uncovered are just as offensive as the first. What are you learning about tonight?
Yeah, well, it's supposedly called the Real CBP, and they are very disturbing posts. We've seen a couple of images obtained by our colleague Nick Valencia. One of them shows Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez standing next to a water fountain and pointing to it with a caption saying, "Is this a toilet?" That refers to her comments earlier in the week where migrants told her that they were forced to drink out of a toilet. We've also seen another meme where Border Patrol agents make light of family separations. We also know that there have been demeaning comments posted about Asians and African Americans. So this is pretty disturbing, even to Facebook. A Facebook spokesperson told us that they took down some of the content from this secret group because it violated some Facebook policies. Here's a part of a quote from a spokesperson there saying, "We believe in giving people a voice, but we also want everyone using Facebook to feel safe. That's why we have community standards and remove anything that violates them." We also know from a CBP spokesperson saying that this alleged content does not reflect the values of the agency, Kate.
Natasha, there's also now another Border Patrol agent coming forward to call out their colleagues, making accusations of humiliating migrants inside a detention facility. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, this supposedly happened in early March, where a Border Patrol agent witnessed coworkers handing a handwritten note to a Honduran migrant, and the note read, "I like men," in Spanish, and this migrant was made to walk through the facility holding that note. We know that through emails obtained by our colleague Nick Valencia, that this Border Patrol agent who witnessed the behavior approached coworkers, called it out as unprofessional, actually alerted a senior Border Patrol agent in charge that evening, but nothing was done according to those emails. Those emails also show that this witnessing agent said this incident was just one of many. And so now Kevin McAleenan has called for an investigation into that incident, Kate.
A lot of investigations now underway under Kevin McAleenan's authority. Thank you so much, Natasha. Really appreciate it. Coming up, 2020 contender John Hickenlooper urged by some of his own staff to drop his run for the presidency and instead run for Senate. Is he considering that option? John Hickenlooper is my guest. And Jeannie Mose on why Ivanka Trump is showing up just about everywhere. Tonight, the fight for 2020. The Democrats running for president are fanned out on this 4th of July holiday weekend from New Hampshire to Nevada, from Texas to Iowa. That is where former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper is headed. His first major campaign swing since a big staff shakeup was announced, with three key positions leaving the team: the campaign manager, finance director, and spokeswoman on their way out. What does this mean for Hickenlooper now? The governor joins me now. Governor, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you. What does this staff shakeup mean? What should folks take from it, Governor? Should this be a bad sign about your campaign?
Well, no, I think I'm excited about where we're going. And I think, you know, that I want to find, you know, the meat of what I've been trying to say and say it in a different way. I mean, I'm running for president because this country, I think Trump has been fueling a national crisis of division. And I think a lot of what I've done, both as an entrepreneur and small business owner, but also as a mayor and a governor, really directly speaks to that. And I feel like, you know, that I haven't been successful at expressing some of the solutions we've created that would be scalable for the entire country.
I mean, one source told CNN that some of the staff on your team more staff on your team could be on their way out, though. Is that the case?
I don't think so, but you never know. I look at what we have assembled and all these really talented people, yeah, and this opportunity where, again, I think I'm the one person out there who's actually done the big progressive things that everyone else is talking about, right? In Colorado, we got to near universal health care, where for the last 3 years, according to U.S. News and World Report, the number one economy in the country. We passed tough new background laws, tough new gun laws in terms, mm-hmm, of universal background checks. I mean, these are things that most of the other candidates talk about but haven't actually done.
Fundraising numbers are rolling out right now as the deadlines have come and gone. Kamala Harris announced today that her second quarter fundraising numbers are just under $12 million in the second quarter. Your campaign hasn't released yours yet. Will you be releasing them soon, or can you tell us what you've raised?
I think we're going to release them next week, and there's a whole process to rolling that out. But I think the key is that we have to have enough resources to be able to get that message out. And we want to make sure that people in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina,
Nevada,
and
beyond can hear it. Are you confident that you have enough resources coming in to get that, to continue getting that message out?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the challenge here is making sure that the message is something that people hear and they connect with. And if that happens, you know, that a successful message spreads like wildfire. You just have to you have to make sure that it's the right message.
What have you been getting? I mean, you say you need to rejigger it, if you will. What have you been getting wrong so far? What's the change now, Governor?
Well, I think, you know, I've talked so much about policy and my record, and I think the record's important to be able to, you know, when I was mayor, we were the first big American city to get to universal preschool. We were able to do major police reform 10 years before Ferguson, and we emphasized that record up front. And I'm not sure, I think maybe it's equally important that people know that I was out of work for 2 years. You know, when I came out to Colorado as a geologist back in 81, and then commodity prices tanked in the mid-80s, our company got sold. We all got laid off. And it's tough, you know, when you've been out of work for a couple of years and you begin to see a different person in the mirror. You know, that's a side of me that a lot of people haven't seen and haven't heard. And I take responsibility. I did not, you know, I control what comes out of my mouth. I hadn't expressed those sides of myself in a way that would connect with people.
In terms of reworking your strategy and how you present yourself, I mean, you are a centrist, you're a moderate, and that's the lane that you have claimed. Joe Biden, the front runner, is also, especially in this new CNN interview, forcefully staking claim on in a moderate lane. How can you make headway if you've got the front runner and you jammed up in the same lane?
Well, certainly, and I have tremendous respect for Vice President Biden, but we've led very different lives over the last 30 years. You know, I spent 15 years as an entrepreneur, a small business owner. I started a business from scratch. The rent was $1 per square foot per year. We had to watch every nickel, and I tried to work with our staff as a family to build what became a very, very successful business. Then I went in and I was a mayor, and in a couple of years there, Time Magazine called me one of the top five big city mayors. That's a very different background than Vice President Biden's.
And real quick, Governor, because you're being really candid about the trouble that you've had to the campaign so far. Can you guarantee me that if you make the debate stage, we're going to see you in Detroit for the CNN debate?
If say that again.
Can you guarantee that you're going to stick this through at least to the CNN debate?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be there. I promise.
Okay. All right, just double checking. Great to see you, Governor. Thank you for being here. See you on the trail.
You bet.
Out front for us next, Jeannie Moos on Ivanka Trump is showing. Ivanka Trump is showing up in some, just take a look at that, very unlikely places, like with the Beatles. Tonight, President Trump is defending his daughter Ivanka on the world stage, saying foreign leaders, quote, loved her, but the internet isn't so convinced. Here's Jeannie Moos.
From landing on the moon to landing with the pilgrims, Ivanka Trump has been everywhere lately, thanks to a video showing a moment when the president's daughter tried to join a conversation with heavyweights like the leaders of France and Britain at the G20 summit.
A lot of people start listening who wouldn't otherwise listen.
Resulting in awkward body language that some read as, what's she doing here?
Been very male-dominant.
And thus was born hashtag unwanted Ivanka. Crashing the Last Supper, joining Yoko Ono and John in bed, walking across Abbey Road with the Beatles, barging in on Nixon and Elvis. The meme rocked Twitter as Ivanka sat atop a beam with construction workers and spied on a royal wedding kiss. It was the French government that posted the video snippet that inspired the meme. But now the French are saying, oops, telling Politico, we didn't anticipate the reaction. We are not responsible for the use made of the clip. How would they know Ivanka would end up amid Egyptian hieroglyphics, clinging to the Loch Ness Monster, at risk of being kicked by U.S. soccer star Megan Rapinoe, adrift with Jack and Rose after the sinking of the Titanic?
You must promise me that you'll survive.
Hashtag unwanted Ivanka has survived for days. The White House blamed Ivanka haters, telling Vanity Fair they were absolutely pathetic.
Has anyone ever heard of Ivanka?
It had been a high-profile trip for the president's daughter. She even made North Korean TV.
Ivanka Trump.
After Korea, she made stops everywhere from Brokeback Mountain to Mount Rush Ivanka, transported by bike like E.T. And like E.T., Ivanka took off. She was even spotted in O.J.'s Bronco, hashtag unwanted Ivanka, riding with a wanted man. Jeannie Moos, CNN, New York.
Honestly, thanks so much for joining us. AC360 starts now.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.